To tell the story of the Exodus, though, we have to explain two things, which we'll do quickly here. One, what were the Hebrews doing in Egypt when they already had a promised land, which was not Egypt? And two, who and what is Moses and how does he get to be the one who leads the Israelites out of Egypt? Well, the Bible's answer to how the Hebrews get to Egypt is plausible, for sure, on the face of it, and that is a periodic danger in semi-arid lands like Israel, famine. And a famine drives the Israelites to the well-stocked granaries of Egypt in hopes of avoiding starvation. And when they get there, they find to their surprise, according to Genesis, one of their own as sub-Pharaoh, the second in command of Egypt. And that is Joseph, who, according to Genesis, being the sort of youngest son who would tell his 12 older brothers that one day he was going to rule over them, inspired their enmity to such a degree that they first tried to kill him and later sold him into slavery to Egypt, where he, because of his immense abilities, turned out to be a spectacular success. As a result of this sequence of events, we are told that the Israelites settle in numbers in the Nile Delta and stay there, what by historical accounts would be from roughly 1700 BCE to about 1250 BCE. In other words, a good long time. At which point, historically at that time, there was lots of new building going on under the impetus of a pharaoh with a very long reign and one of the great pharaohs of Egyptian history, Ramses II. And the book of Exodus tells us that the Hebrews, who were growing numerous and troublesome, were impressed to work on these projects, probably not pyramids, but other sorts of building projects, and felt themselves to be a people enslaved. We're also told that their population was getting to be so troublesome that Pharaoh sent out an order that all boy babies of the Hebrews should be killed. This finds an echo in the last and greatest of the plagues that Moses sends on Egypt, or God sends on Egypt with Moses announcing his plans. And the story is, in a motif that goes on, actually in Beowulf and in lots of other places, he's set afloat in the Nile in a basket. He's picked up by Pharaoh's daughter, is raised as an Egyptian, and indeed Moses is an Egyptian name, and only comes to find out his true heritage later on. You can read this as a kind of a parable, too. It's like a privileged person coming in later life to feel a connection, a wider connection with other people who are not so fortunate. I don't know. It's an evocative paradigm. It works in the way that the Bible tends to work, too, in making of Moses somebody who's pulled out of a nowhere, in this the Nile, into a somewhere. Throughout the Bible, God shows a consistent preference for stepping outside of human boundaries, preferring younger sons to older and so forth, to emphasize that it is his power, not human power, at work. So with Moses. When he grows up, he comes to recognize his affinity with the Hebrews. He sees a Hebrew getting beaten up by an Egyptian and kills the Egyptian, so the story goes. And the next day he reprimands some folks he sees out and about, and they say, "Huh, you're going to kill us like you did the Egyptian?" And he realizes the secret is out and takes off for the hinterlands so as to avoid trouble. While he's out there in the wilderness, which is the Sinai Desert, basically, and it's a real desert. Not the biggest desert in the world, but really deserty. He gets married and is tending the flocks of his father-in-law, Jethro, when the decisive event happens.